Welcome to Rim Objects Radio, the show about all things Rim Objects. Your chance to hear what is going on inside Rim Objects, and also from time to time hear from users like yourself and what they are doing with Rim Objects products. Since this is the premiere episode, let me tell you a little about who I am. My name is Jim McKeith, and in addition to hosting this podcast, I'm also a developer evangelist for Rim Objects software and am involved in all things related to developer relations. That includes screencasts, wiki pages, blog posts, and presenting at conferences. Remind me later and I'll mention some of the conferences we're coming up on. Just in case you are new to Rim Objects, I thought I'd also tell you a little about what we do. We provide a number of tools and frameworks for multiple platforms, including .NET, Xcode, and Delphi. This show is all about those tools and what you can do with them. Today, let me introduce Mark Hoffman, the Chief Architect and Co-Founder of Rim Objects Software. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Today, we're going to talk about summer 2010 release of our products. But first, let's talk about some of the conferences we have coming up. Is that okay with you?
Sure, yeah.
So if people want to find out some of the conferences we're going to be at, where can they find those at, Mark?
Well, they can go to remobjects.com/events. That's where we have a list of all the stuff that's planned and going on.
So a few of those things we have coming up here, and I'll plan on getting Sebastian on here, the other developer evangelist, and we'll go through these in more detail, but just to let everybody know as in much advance as possible. First one we have is Delphi Live in San Jose. That's the 23rd through the 26th of August. Then we have, and I'm going to call it Delphi Days, but what's the German word for it?
Delphi Tage.
All right, that's in Berlin.
Yep.
And I probably still said it wrong.
I'm not going to comment on that.
That's fine. So that's in Berlin, so then we got to make sure we say it right. September 16th through the 18th. And Econ, which is the German version of Delphi Live. Of course, they've been doing that since Delphi came out, pretty much, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. I never been to one, actually. But yeah, I think they've been going on for really long.
But you're going to be at this Econ and Delphi Live both, right?
I think so, yeah. I haven't finalized plans for Econ yet, but probably going to go there too, yeah.
Okay. So that's in Darmstadt, Germany.
Yep.
September 27th through 30th. And then we're also back in the stateside, going to be at 360 iDev. Now, you're planning on being that one as well?
Definitely, yeah. Looking forward to it very much.
Yeah, that one should be lots of fun on iPhone development. That's in Austin, Texas, November 7th through the 10th. And also in the middle there, we're going to be doing, call it the Roadshow, RO Roadshow, Rim Objects Roadshow. And we're going to have a stop in Denmark on the 21st of September, talking about iPhone development. So lots of fun stuff in there coming up, and hopefully we'll have more details later. And always, you can catch this at rimobjects.com/events.
That's right.
Okay, now to the main point of today's episode, the summer 2010 release. And as always, they can find the information on this at rimobjects.com/what's new. And we have a lot of stuff new right now, don't we?
Indeed, yeah. One could say almost too much, yeah. So we had a busy few weeks behind us getting all the stuff finalized and crossing the last T's and dotting the last I's. But we made it, so it's out now. So people can go to /what's new to find out like the high-level overview of the big new features we have, and go to /changelogs to find the complete details of every little bug and enhancement and feature that's in there. It's quite a bit there.
I appreciate that it's all condensed down into the What's New page, personally, because changelogs tend to be a little overwhelming at times.
Definitely, yeah. That's why we do it. So. Plus, I mean, in changelogs, you just have the one-line thing, and with the What's New, we try to sit down and actually write a couple of paragraphs of why the stuff actually is there and why it's cool and what's it all about.
Exactly. So one of the big ones is the JavaScript business rule scripting.
Definitely, yeah. I think that's the one we're most excited about, yeah.
So real quick, what is that? What platforms does it affect? And what tools does it affect?
Well, right now it's in Data Abstract 4.NET and by extension in Relativity Server, which is based on .NET, but we ship for all three editions. But the plan is to have this in all three editions, .NET, Delphi, and Xcode, by the end of the year. And it's going to be working cross-platform, so you can write the same script code and it's going to run in any of your data abstract applications, no matter which other platforms they run on. So the idea behind this is that, the main point why you go for a multi-tier solution is that you want to put business logic in your middle tier, right? You want to control how people can access your data, what kind of changes they can make, who can access what data, and so on.
Right, exactly.
And traditionally, meaning up until right now, you pretty much had to hard code this information right into your executable. So if you're writing a server in .NET, you got to write this as .NET code. If you write your server in Delphi, you got to write it as Delphi code. And then every time you change the logic, you got to, build a new server, deploy that. If you got logic in your clients, you might even have to build new clients and get those out to all the people using it. And the idea with the new business rule scripting is that you can put the business rules written in JavaScript right inside your schema, and then they're going to work cross-platform, no matter if your server is running on .NET or in Relativity or on Delphi. And you can also put client scripts there that are going to be transferred to the client at runtime. So you can have business rules that run on the client, but they're always going to be up to date. So when you change rules in your schema on the server, clients are always going to get the latest scripts and be able to run those without people having to download a new client executable or having to go through some update process for that.
That's really cool. So with the Relativity server, they can use that with any platform, so they can be using this, start using this, or any client
exactly,
version,
yeah.
Right? So it could be a Delphi client against a Relativity server.
Exactly, yeah.
The Relativity server will run the JavaScript business rules, but it can't download those to the Delphi client until the later release. Is that right?
Right, yeah. So basically, the Delphi client wouldn't support this right now. It would support that by the end of the year, but the .NET client would know how to retrieve those rules and run them. And I think Relativity is really the place where this comes together most, because up until now, Relativity server is relatively new anyway. We just shipped it in the spring release, but right now, before this release, you could only put your data in there, but you couldn't really put any business logic in there. So as soon as you needed business logic, which granted pretty much any application needs, otherwise you wouldn't go multi-tier really, you still needed your custom server. But with the scripting being there now, people can really focus on writing the client application in whatever platform they want to do and just use Relativity to host their service, including their business logic.
Now, since Relativity is fairly new, maybe we ought to explain a little bit about that for people that don't know. It's a reusable middle tier, essentially.
Exactly, yeah. So basically what Relativity is it's basically a pre-compiled DA server with basically some extra infrastructure on top that rather than serving data from your specific two or three schemas that you defined once, as you would do in your custom server, you can basically plug in schemas at runtime that you want to host in that server. So it's more of a, think of it like an IIS or an Apache for your data, for your middle tier. So it's a running server, and you can just say, okay, here's the schema, here's my connections to the database. I just want to host that in there. And suddenly the server is providing this middle tier services for this data. And now with the new release, you can add business logic both for the server and for the .NET clients in there as well.
Very cool.
Yeah,
I think that's a neat feature.
Yeah, and one of the benefits of Relativity is also that basically you get all the features of Data Abstract for .NET, which is what Relativity is built on, even if you're a Delphi developer or a pure Xcode developer. So basically, because you're not building your server in Delphi or any other platform, because you're just using Relativity based on DA.NET, and you're just focusing on the client. So you can write your best iPhone client, you want the best iPad client, the best Silverlight client, WPF client, whatever you want, or Delphi VCL client, and you don't really care about the backend anymore. You just talk to Relativity, and then all the functionality of a DA server is there, and all the power of DA.NET.
Yeah, so I guess some of the big features that DA.NET has is the DA SQL, which
That's right,
like
yeah.
writes SQL against the schema as if that was a database.
Exactly, yeah. So, I guess maybe we're going a little bit too far down the rabbit hole here, but basically DA SQL allows you to basically treat the data your middle tier exposes as if it was a normal SQL database. So you have the full flexibility or almost the full flexibility of SQL to write queries against that data. So rather than saying, with traditional middle tier solutions, you could say, okay, give me the customers table, right? Or maybe give me the customer table and use this filter, customer name equals whatever. But with DISQL, you can write actual SQL code to create really complex queries against the middle tier. And those are still gonna run all against all the business logic and all that. So you can write like, I don't know, select asterisk from customers where and write a real complex query. But that's not going to run on the database. It's going to run in the middle tier, and the middle tier is going to process that in addition to your business logic. So if there's some rule in there saying, this user can't really see half of the data for, I don't know, security reason or whatever, then those rules are still going to apply because you're writing SQL against the middle tier, not against your backend.
Probably could do a whole episode on relativity. I think there's a lot of
yeah, I think we could probably do an old episode on relativity and another one on DSQL. I think we should, yeah.
That's a good idea. We'll have to do that. So the next big thing that's new in here is the .NET templates, the new .NET templates.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we've obviously been shipping with new project templates since the start. So basically, you got to get started somewhere, right, when you're creating your new project. And the old templates were pretty focused on the server. So you'd say, okay, I want to create a server that's a WinForm server, or I want to create a server that's, I don't know, can run as a service. And then the whole process of writing a client for that sort of was sort of left to you. And we figured, after shipping that for a while, we figured that really was the wrong approach. I mean, especially with relativity entering the picture now. And we really wanted people to focus on creating the client. So what we've done is we've created new templates that basically focus on, I want to write a database WPF client. I want to write a WinForms client. I want to write a Silverlight client. And so basically, that's the kind of templates you pick when you go to file a new project in Visual Studio. And then up comes a new wizard that's going to ask you a couple of things like, oh, what kind of server do you want to talk to? And you can say, okay, I've got this running relativity server here that I want to just grab this info from. Or I've got an existing DA server I wrote last year, and I'm just writing a new, say, Silverlight client to add web access to that. Or the third option would be, I want to create a new server, and then you're going to get a client and a server project as part of that wizard. And so basically, the idea was to streamline the entire process of how you really get started with DA, be it as a new user coming to DA for the first time, or being an experienced user who just needs to really quickly get a new project up and running. Again, be it a full solution with client server, or be it just a new client for relativity or for some existing solution that's out there. And I think the new templates are really going to help people get started with that a lot easier and quicker. Sorry, and I believe you got a screencast that's going to show that to people as well. So if people go to remotes.com/TV, where we're starting to do a couple of screencasts for things, they should find a screencast there to give them a first impression of what this is going to look like.
That's true, yes. Now, the connecting to an existing server template would let someone that's moving from Delphi to Delphi Prism or to .NET in general create a client that connects to an existing Delphi middle tier. Is that correct?
Pretty much anything, yeah. So as long as you've got an existing DA server that you wrote, be it in DA Delphi or DA.NET, that you want to connect to, you can use this, basically that option in the template to just create the new client that's going to talk to that server.
So if somebody wants to have a Silverlight client, then they could just create a Silverlight client for an existing server and they'd be good to go.
Exactly, yeah. So you could have like a Delphi solution, I don't know, that's been running for like 3 years, and you're using Data Abstract Delphi for the server, and you got your VCL client, rich client for Windows, also using Data Abstract for Delphi. And now your end user says, oh, I don't know, can you put this on the web? And you just go to Visual Studio and say new Silverlight data abstract project, and then you say connect to this existing server I've got running, and then you select the tables you want to pull in and all that, and you're up and running.
So we have client platforms, WinForms, WPF, and Silverlight. Is ASP.NET planned in there, or is that kind of a different beast?
It's definitely planned. Yeah. So basically, I mean, another factor with this was that we wanted to make it really easy to add more templates for this. So I mean, over time, I'd like to see not like 3 or 4, but like, I don't know, 10 or 15 different templates for different stuff. Like, I don't know, you could envision like a mono-object C template to create a Mac application, or a mono WinForm specific application, or GTK Sharp application, or maybe even just a class library that you want to plug into some existing project you have that would just like create a new class library that basically has the data abstract client stuff in there.
So there's kind of really two big announcements with this. Is one is a new template engine that makes it easier for us to add templates, and then the other is these new templates they can start using today.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And just like the scripting also, it's worth mentioning that we're starting doing this with .NET right now, but the wizard and all that stuff is already implemented in a way that we're going to use the same thing. We're going to provide the same template experience and the same sort of philosophy as starting new projects. Also for Delphi with the next release, and in the long run, also for MonoDevelop as well.
So that's planned for the fall release then?
I believe the Delphi template should be in the next release, and the MonoDevelop, I'm not sure, that might probably be early next year, but I don't think we're ready to put exact timelines on that yet.
Okay, that's fine. So OData, and it's interesting actually, because I was just thinking we ought to do something about OData in our tools, and the next thing I know, Carlos saying, hey, we have OData support. Wow!
Welcome to RemObjects.
That's right, you guys move so fast here. So OData, for those that don't know, is the Open Data Protocol. It's a, well, maybe you can explain it better than I can.
OData basically is a sort of a, it sits on top of REST, which I think lots of people probably know. REST or RESTful services is really how do I put this? It's not so much a protocol, but it's more like a convention for accessing data via HTTP. So if you got a REST server or a server that exposes data via REST, you'd have like specific URLs you can go to, like, I don't know, myserver.com/data/customers, and you will get the customer list, and you can go to /customers/, I don't know, and some ID, and you get data for that specific customer. So, I mean, lots of people really started using REST, but the problem with REST is that it's, as I said, it's not really a protocol like SOAP or what Data Abstract uses. It's really just a loose convention of certain things that people might want to do. So there isn't really a standard you can implement, and this is a REST server and anyone can talk to that. And as a matter of fact, lots of people ask us, oh, can't you add like REST service to the SDK? And the thing is, it's not really easy to add that because there isn't really much in REST that's sort of common for all REST services. I mean, REST really is just HTTP GETs, and you're going to get some sort of XML or JSON or some other data form back. And what to do is really up to, what to do with that is really up to you. And what OData does is basically sit on top of that and specify, provide specifications for a lot of the loose ends in REST. So if you've got an OData server, you pretty much, you talk to it like a REST server, but you sort of know what to expect. You know what kind of XML structure you're going to get back. You know how to retrieve metadata to like find out what tables are there in the first place, what are the primary keys, and so on. So OData is a much better fit for publishing data. You would just want to be universally accessible by any sort of client. So what we support in Data Abstract now is basically REST, standalone REST, and OData. But I think OData is really what people want to be using if they do this sort of thing, especially since OData is a superset of REST. So if you publish data as OData, you automatically are also publishing it is at REST. So how this works is really simple. We just have one component that you just drop next to your server components you have already, and basically you just tell it, this is the HTTP server I'm running already that provides my Data Abstract data, and you just point it to the schema, and suddenly that HTTP server is automatically streaming data via OData as well. So basically, once people go to the specific URLs for OData with an OData client instead of a Data Abstract client, they can access that data, and they can run, I don't know, queries against it and do updates if you allow that, and all sorts of things.
And we also have OData support in Relativity now as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. So basically that uses the same infrastructure, of course, but basically, yeah, there's a checkbox in Relativity for OData, just like we had one in for REST in the previous release. They're both there now, so you can just set the check mark on your specific domain and say, I want to publish this data via OData as well, and suddenly it's there.
So what this is really providing is we're added it to our servers, and our clients have the ability to communicate via OData. But if I understood correctly, we're not saying you can use our clients to connect to any OData server out there. Is that right?
Exactly. No. So what we're doing right now is we're publishing data for other clients. I mean, the idea is that if you're writing the client anyway, you might as well use Data Abstract and the full feature set it has, right? So, I mean, OData is really, if you also want to make the data available to clients that aren't data abstract. I mean, maybe you got to write a client in some platform we don't support yet. Like, I know you want to write a Java client for that gets some data out of your server or things like that. In a way, that's really the same way we look at our SOAP support, is that if you want to write the client and the server both on platforms we support, sure, you could use SOAP, but really you shouldn't. You should use our own bin message, because it's a lot more efficient, it's a lot faster over the network, it uses a lot less traffic, and so on. And the same sort of applies for OData, that it doesn't really make sense to use a DA server, publish data as OData, and then use DA to use OData to talk to that server, because with DA you got much better ways to get to that same data and much more efficient. So the OData is really just there if you got to get to this data through some other means where you can't use data abstract.
I also think OData would be great for if you want to publish a public API for your data for some reason or another, right?
Exactly, yeah. And the nice thing about OData is that lots of people are writing tools that use OData without actually knowledge about the data, about the specific database. I mean, if you're writing a DA application, usually you know pretty well what kind of server you're talking to. So, you know, you have like customers and you're writing a CRM, right? Or you're writing a bug database and you have certain expectations of what the data is. But especially for OData, lots of people are writing applications that are just there to like pull data of any kind and run analysis on that, on those, like the Microsoft, the pivot thing they demoed recently. So our OData support in data abstract is really a nice way to just get that data out there to tools that you didn't write or that you don't want to write yourself, because they're already out there and they can talk to OData, and you can just go and use them.
So this is great if your boss comes to you and says, "Hey, we need to have OData support." You have to go click checkbox. Okay, I'm done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sounds like a Dilbert. Okay.
Yeah.
So another big one we have is on the iOS support for background tasks.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so basically what this is about is, I mean, as probably most people who at least follow iOS at all, is that one of the big features Apple introduced with iOS 4 is support for multitasking, right? And what they did, because, I mean, obviously the iPhone and the iPad, they're fairly limited hardware devices compared to modern PCs. They don't really allow multitasking where, like, you have 500 applications and they're all running wild, but they have pretty specific rules as to what applications can do when they're not actually on screen. And then most of these are related to services that don't really have much to do with our stuff, like background audio or location tracking and those sort of things. But the one thing that did fit in with our model is what Apple calls background task completion. And that means that usually when the user presses the home button and quits your application or leaves your application, your application gets shut down right that minute, and that's it. And you're not going to see another CPU cycle until the user goes back to your application, right? But what if you're in the middle of, like, I don't know, uploading some data to a server, or you started downloading like a big chunk of data and you're like halfway there? You don't really want to be killed at that moment and lose that transfer and have to start it again. So one of the services that iOS 4 now supports is that you can register for background task completion. So you can basically say, "Hey, you know, I know the user quit my app, but I'm kind of in the middle of something. Can you give me 5 minutes to finish this thing?" Right. So what Rouse's SDK does is automatically in the background, without the user actually having to write any new code for that, is that whenever you got tasks going on in the background, we automatically register them with this background task completion thing. So when the user quits your application while you're doing data transfer, you can rest assured, or at least as far as you can, given that you never know how connectivity goes with mobile devices, but you can rest assured that the operating system is going to leave your application alive in the background for 5 to 10 minutes at least to try and finish that task. And basically, you can just go on doing the transfer, and your application is going to go to sleep after that. And again, this is something you don't really notice as a developer or have to do anything about or worry about. It's just sort of, it just works. But normally, if user presses the home button and then comes back, he would get, like, I don't know, an error message or however you handle that, saying, "Dude, I couldn't upload that picture you just took." Or, I know you really wanted this 3 megabytes of data down so you could read it now, but you know what? I couldn't finish that. Instead, your application now finished to download that and only went to sleep after that.
So you're saying it's not something the developer is going to notice, so it's not something the developer has to turn on, they just get this automatically?
Exactly. I mean, on the iPhone SDK level, it's something the developer has to take care of. So basically, anytime you do something you want to keep running in the background, you got to tell the operating system, okay, I got this thing going on. Please give me up to, I think it's up to 10 minutes now that they allow. And basically, you get a notification when those 10 minutes are off, and then they're going to yank your application anyway. So you have a certain amount of sort of bookkeeping to do for that. But as far as the SDK is concerned, and by extension data abstract, we take care of that. So if you're just making remote calls using RO or DA, that's going to work seamlessly for you. So that's nothing that you got to do to keep your application alive for that. Of course, if you're doing other things independently of RO, you still might want to register those actions as background tasks that you want to get time on. But basically, if all your network communication is done via RO, and to be honest, network communication is really the only thing that really affects this, because most other things you can just go to sleep and recover later on, and your application is never the wiser. It's just when network communication is involved, obviously, if you send half the data and then you go to sleep for half an hour, or possibly 2 days, then the connection is going to get broken when you get back, right? So network communication is where this really comes in, where this is really important. And if you do that via RO, then that's taken care of for you.
So the first three features we talked about were data abstract related. This one was Rim Objects SDK related, right?
Right, yeah. Well, by extension, I mean, this also applies to data abstract. So even if you just use data abstract and you never really worry about data abstract using the SDK in the background, or underneath, then you're still going to benefit from that. So if you just say, oh, begin get data for table, I don't know, whatever, then that request is still going to complete, because, I mean, underneath it's using RO, and RO is interacting with the background task completion.
Okay, so for a data abstract user, they really don't have to worry about it at all. It automatically handles all the background tasks?
Yeah, but basically for both. So, I mean, In essence, you can just forget everything I said the past 10 minutes, and it's just going to work nicely for you.
It's magic!
That's how you want features to work, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Just want to turn it on and have it do what it needs to do.
Yeah, you don't even have to turn it on.
Oh, wow.
You can actually turn it off, though, if you want. So there's a method call that's in the docs that you can use to, if for whatever reason you say, okay, I don't want to participate in this. For, I don't know, you might have a specific reason why you don't want to keep the network up when the user quits your app, then you can turn it off. But by default, it's just going to work, because I think that's the most intuitive thing to do, given that the OS now supports this.
Yes. One thing about the scripting I think we forgot to mention is they can download that, what is it, RO script that we have available now that's open source?
Exactly, yeah. So one of the challenges we faced when we started with the scripting is we went through JavaScript, because JavaScript is pretty much cross-platform and ubiquitous. But the problem is, on the .NET side, there wasn't really any good JavaScript that we could use. I mean, we could have used ActiveScript via COM or something like that, but that's less than ideal, and it wouldn't run under Mono, which, at least for servers, is a very big scenario for us with DA4.NET. So what we actually set out is we just wrote our own JavaScript script engine. I mean, based on the experience that we have from the Pascal script for Delphi we have, and of course the Oxygen compiler. So basically, what we have is RemObject script. It's an open source project. You can download the installer at remobject.com/free, or you can go to code.remobject.com and get access to the SVN repository and all that good stuff. And basically, what it is, it's a free JavaScript runtime for .NET that you can use to, well, pretty much in any kind of application where you want to add JavaScripting support. I don't know, say you're writing your own web browser completely in .NET, or I don't know, you just want to, just like we do in data abstract, you have an application and you just want to have like a dialogue where you can go in and write macros that run in your application. So you can use that, and basically, you can expose your own objects to the JavaScript if you want. And again, that's what we do with data abstract to allow you to do any data abstract specific functions. And of course, you have access to the entire standard JavaScript runtime. So objects like date and math and things like that. And basically, yeah, you can put that in your own application and make it JavaScriptable, regardless of data abstract. And that's free and open source, and you can download it from our website. And of course, if you install data abstract, that comes as part of data abstract, and we basically we build on top of that to put the scripting in Relativity and DA.NET.
Now, with that, do we have access through there through the whole .NET framework for like collections and whatnot, or do you have to use something else?
In theory, yes. So basically, what happens is that if you host JavaScript yourself, basically you've got a you can expose certain classes or certain assemblies to your object model. So you can say, oh, no, I got this class here. Make that available to JavaScript, or I got this whole namespace or whole assembly. Make that available to JavaScript, and once you do, you can. So you have pretty fine grained control about what your scripts can do or can't do, which is really necessary because I mean you don't really want. I mean, depending on what kind of scenario you run your scripts in your application, you don't really want something open ended where worst case you're downloading scripts off the internet. Again, say if you're writing your own web browser, you don't really want that to have access to, file.write, right?
Yeah.
So you have really fine-grained control. So in the case for DA, for Data Abstract, we actually don't expose any regular .NET classes. So we really just have the standard JavaScript runtime, again, math, date, and so on. And we've got like a handful, I think it's like 20 or 30 of our own classes we expose. And those are classes we specifically defined so that we can provide the same classes once we get to data to Delphi and to Xcode, because again the point with DA scripting really was that we wanted a scripting language that's going to work across all the different platforms. So once you put once you would put code into your client scripts that assumes that it has access to certain .NET classes, then that client script couldn't run in a Delphi client or in a Mac client anymore, right?
Okay, that makes sense. So we have documentation on that scripting available on our website then?
Yeah. I think, to be honest, the documentation is still a little sparse at this point. But yeah, you can find info on the wiki, of course, as for all the products. And again, you can find the source code if you want that at code.ramobjects.com, which is basically our repository for all kinds of projects that we want to make the source available for. We also have Pascal script on their internet pack and other projects. Even some internal, well, not internal, but like personal projects from some of our employees, some of mine as well. Or if you just want to go the easy route, you can just download the installer of our website at ramobjects.com/free. And again, if you install Data Abstract, the new release, that's going to install script as well. Basically, it's going to install the same package as if you grab the standalone installer of the website.
We got through the stuff we wanted to talk about. Is there anything else we wanted to cover?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's a couple more features that I think we probably shouldn't go in there. But again, people can go to ramobjects.com/what's-new to find the rest of those. And again, if you do check out the change logs, there's a whole bunch of stuff there as well. I think we got over 50 what we call enhancements, so that's not something we really call a big feature, but it's still something that's new and going to make your life better. And of course, again, a pretty big chunk of bug fixes as well over the previous release. So all in all, I think this is a pretty exciting release, and we're pretty proud of it and glad it's out the door too.
Yeah, yep, that's always good. So anybody that's hearing this now can go and grab the latest release, either a demo or update their subscription if they currently have updates.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, I mean, as always, these are all free updates for anyone with an active subscription. So just go to portal.ramobjects.com, log in with a user account, and you can download the full versions.
And I guess if your subscription's expired, now would be a good time to renew.
Definitely, yes.
Well, thanks for your time today, Mark, and it looks like it'll be an exciting release for everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
So thanks to all of our users for listening. I hope you enjoyed this, our premiere episode, first of many to come. We've already mentioned a few we're planning, and we have more in the works as well. We'd love to hear what you think about this and for other suggestions on episodes. Please email us at radio@rimobjects.com. And you can find this episode and more at rimobjects.com/radio. And since this is our first episode, it might take a little while to get us on iTunes, but hopefully soon there as well. Be sure to visit rimobjects.com, download these updates and or trials, depending on what your subscription level is right now. Let us know what you think of those. And again, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you next time.